Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of the Wilderness and Wellness Podcast. In this episode, I sit down for a chat with mother, wife, survivalist, fishing and big game hunting guide, and Alone Show Season 6 contestant, Michelle Wohlberg. Michelle talks about growing up in the Canadian bush, hunting and trapping, the events leading up to and how she prepared for her time on the Alone Show, and she also gives us more details about her experience on the show, including the mental and physical recovery she went through afterwards. Michelle fills us in on her recent adventures as a backcountry hunting and fishing guide in Canada, with her 7-year-old son Lars in tow, of course, and also tells us about her school, Legacy Survival Training. We finish off the conversation as Michelle offers us some tips on how we can more easily incorporate a preparedness mindset into our lives. Stay tuned. Welcome to the Wilderness and Wellness Podcast. I'm your host, Ron Wallin. This podcast is an exploration of the ways that people can reconnect to the natural world through bushcraft, naturalist skills, and time spent immersed in the nature they find around and within them. We also discuss how this reconnection can increase our individual well-being and that of our communities and the earth. Thank you for joining me. I'm really glad you're here. Well, friends, welcome to this newest episode of the podcast. And before we get into our discussion with Michelle, I'd just like to touch on a few things. One, I've been getting really great feedback from the tracking series. So thank you all those who have written me and offered support online, especially on Facebook is where I've had most activity, and really appreciate that. I'm glad it's really reaching and touching people, and people are looking to expand their knowledge and understanding of the world of tracking and how it can help us to relate to nature more deeply and to ourselves, quite honestly. And we'll continue that discussion. I've got quite a few interviews lined up, actually quite a few interviews already recorded and a few lined up beyond that. So we'll continue that, and I hope you continue to enjoy that. And as always, reviews on the various platforms you're listening to this podcast on are always helpful, especially on Apple Podcasts. That tends to be the one that benefits the show the most. So really appreciate that. The next thing I wanted to discuss is kind of the near-term future of the show, if you will. This has been a wonderful journey thus far, and don't worry, I'm not announcing that the show is going away, because it's been really great. We've had some amazing conversations, and the listening numbers keep going up, and that's very gladdening to my heart, because it tells me that this is something that's valuable, something that people are getting a lot out of. And that the message is getting out there, the message of connection with the natural world, with self, with those around us, and hopefully it's helping turn people towards good things in life. And I think that is what's happening. And as I said, the numbers and the increase in listeners is continuing to bear that out. That being said, I've had some things come up in my personal life recently, some very good things actually, but ones that I will need to be focusing more time on, and thus making room in my life by kind of doing away with or decreasing the time I spend on other things. And unfortunately, this podcast is going to be one of them. I toyed with the idea of just kind of stopping it all together, but because of the growth we've had and because I'm very passionate about this message and about the conversations we've been having, I definitely don't want to just stop completely. I think we have great momentum, and I want to keep the conversations going. I want to keep people thinking and plugged into these concepts and ideas and ways of reconnecting with the world around them. So that being said, I will be decreasing the amount of output of the podcast. And, you know, I wasn't prolific to begin with, but it's going to be even less so now. And I'm guessing probably once a month at the most. And maybe, you know, if something comes up, I'll put out a few more than that, or I may even be a little less than that. It's just going to kind of have to see how it goes. But again, I've got some really fun, exciting things with my family that really, really requires a lot of attention on my part. And so I'm needing to make that room. And I will say this, that the ultimate goal of this latest exciting venture is to be able to free me up in the future so that I can come back even stronger with this podcast and this message and an output of maybe even more than a podcast, but many other things as well. So that looks to be promising for the future. If you've got any feedback on that for me, feel free to send it along. As always, I'm open to conversations and feedback, and you can send that to ron@coyotespath.com. And with that said, we'll get into the meat and potatoes of this episode, which is our interview with Michelle. So just a little bit of an intro on Michelle. Michelle hails from Mullingar, Saskatchewan. Mother, wife, woman, survivor. Michelle is the mother to a 7-year-old wild child named Lars and has a longtime partnership with Dan, her amazingly supportive and understanding husband. Female, woman, human, Michelle represented the few Canadians and women as a contestant on the History Channel's Alone Show Season 6. Her story, however, does not start or stop there. As a homesteader, a businesswoman, and now a professional big game guide, she has traveled Canada looking for her next adventure and challenge, forging her way in normally male-dominated industries and teaching her skills to anyone who seeks such knowledge. Being geared towards learning and adventure, she believes life is for living and encourages everyone to explore their surroundings because one never knows when their time might be up. And with that, I hope you enjoy this interview with Michelle.
I'm sure they would have shown more of my footage, but I was either naked and swearing or naked and swearing in my nice warm shelter. So
that was your strategy for not getting a lot of airtime, huh?
I thought it was actually going to give me lots of airtime, to be honest. I figured that was really what the viewers would want. Like,
right?
Minus 15 outside, Michelle something sauna in her shelter. Seems like I don't know.
You know what America wants.
That's right. I mean, I wasn't like, no, it was showing everything on camera, but you could tell, like, it was, you know, you could see the shoulders and stuff. And I mean, right. it was a point of pride with me, like that I had, you know, it was cold, miserable, starting to snow. And I had this nice, super hot shelter that I could strip down in and wash my hair in and be comfortable like every night. That's pretty decent, you know?
Heck yeah.
It's pretty decent to have. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome.
We don't talk about that though. It didn't happen. It didn't show. But it wasn't shown, it didn't happen, right?
Exactly, yeah. And it's amazing to me with that show, like by the end of the whole season, if you think about it, each contestant and even only the ones that, you know, make it a while, you only see like literally a combined hour of footage from each contestant. It's just...
Exactly.
It's madness. And how many hours do you think you filmed while you're out there?
Oh, I filmed a lot. I filmed a lot. It got to the point where I just had my camera rolling all the time. And like, so a lot of the footage would just be completely crap because I created like a little sling for the big camera so that had good audio. So I would be like walking through the Muskogee tundra area, you know, like I'd be sinking in cause it's all, the ground is all super uneven and like you'd fall through in a water patch or whatever. So it'd be like me stumbling around in the bush on the trail I was making, and so it's like the camera would just be everywhere, but I was like, wow. I don't care, this is what my reality is, like I'm not gonna, you know, like I'd set up the camera sometimes and like walk away from it and it would be like me wiping out on
not gonna sugarcoat this is what you get, folks.
It looks like crap because it was crap. It was crap territory. That's why it looks like crap, because it was.
That's funny. So give me kind of a background on you, Michelle. Like what put you in this place to learn these skills and to be interested in the outdoor skills and all that, to get you to the point of, you know, wanting to get on the show or getting on the show, however it is that you got there?
I grew up doing a lot of fishing, and a lot of hunting. So it was just kind of incorporated just for me being like a little toddler, you know. My grandma would tell a story about how I'd be sitting up. I'd be in like a baby carrier, like a car seat, basically, little bassinet. And I'd be sitting on the ice and there would be like a line tied onto the like so that I could rock, you know, with a little line tied down on by the ice fishing hole. So we're talking like I was, you know, 4 or 5 months old sort of thing. Maybe not even, because I was born in January. So by the time, I mean, I'd be a couple of months old, and you know, that's, it was just always something that was part of me. So then when you're a kid, we call them bushcraft shelters as an adult, but when you're a kid, they're like forts. You're going to go out and build a fort, right? Right. You build like forts all the time, or you just bang them out. Like you've got lean-tos. I mean, the things kids can build, because, you know, they're not restrained by adult thinking of, you know, structural integrity. A kid's just like, I'm going to build the heck out of this treehouse.
I'm going to throw a bunch of stuff up and crawl in.
I mean, I never even really got hurt. I mean, kids, I mean, incredibly, incredibly resilient. But yeah, so I mean, I was always out there just building forts. And one time my dad had bought a mushroom identification book. So then I would take my mushroom identification book with me, and I'd be like, you know, taking like a spore sample of some mushrooms I found to try to identify them. And I mean, this is when I was, you know, 9, 10, it was all self-taught. I mean, outside of being out there in those elements, I didn't have somebody to tell me, well, that's not the proper way how to do that. It was just, I was a free range kid, and it was self-taught. So I grew up doing that. And then, you know, as you get older, you build less forts, but you kind of spend more time doing other things, like maybe reading and just enjoying yourself outside more berry picking or kind of something like that.
Right.
So we would also sustenance fish and hunt as well. Like that's where our groceries and food came from. So I learned, again, from a young age to be self-sufficient and self-sustaining. Like we had a big garden. We didn't have any money. My mom had already passed away. There was 4 of us girls. My dad would be gone working on the rigs. We'd have, you know, people sometimes to come look at us, or we'd go into like a foster care system and go stay at other people's houses and stuff. Mm. And that's just kind of how it was.
And remind us for the listeners, where is this at? You're in Canada.
Yeah, Saskatchewan. So we're kind of in the mid-central Saskatchewan.
Gotcha.
I was born, I wasn't actually born. I was born en route to the hospital, or on the farm, I guess. I never made it to the hospital till later. But that was in North Battleford. And then I spent some of my earliest years in a little community called Hafford, kind of a Ukrainian settlement. And then I kind of went to school in Spiritwood and Mayfair and Saskatoon, all over the place. Anyways, in that area. So it was just a really normal thing for kids to know how to hunt and fish and trap and shoot gophers. It wasn't like you were weird for knowing how to go and set a snare line. It was really, really normal.
Even for the young ladies, huh?
Yeah, even for the young ladies. Yeah, there was no
difference. Awesome.
Yeah. So I grew up with my dad. We have a lot of differences, and I don't talk with him now. And, you know, we just had a lot of differences. But to give the man the credit that's due to him, you know, he never ever told me I could never do something because I was a girl. Mm. It was never like, oh, you can't lift that, or you can't run the chainsaw, or you can't shoot guns, or you can't do those things. You know, girls aren't meant to do that. I don't ever remember once him saying that. There's other things he said that I can't get on board with. You know, we don't need to go into all that. But, you know, when you have those formative years of going, no, like nobody's going to do it for you. You get up and do it yourself, you know, kind of made me that strong person. So it set me up for later in life, where I was back to a homesteading after, you know, I kind of did some financial planning and real estate and collections and, you know, some business type stuff. I kind of burnt out from doing that and started a family with, you know, so we had Lars, and I went back to homesteading and just really, really fully immersed it. You know, I was raising animals for other people to sell, to butcher, and then kind of a jack of all trades. People would just call me up and go, hey, you know, can you build this, or can you paint my house, or can you clean my house, or can you, any job that needed to be done, you know, people would phone me up. And because of my lifestyle, or my childhood being what it was always like, oh yeah, no, I've never built a greenhouse, but like I'm going to now. Why not? Or I don't know how to do X, but I'm going to figure it out and let's get her done. And then, yeah. And then the TV shows, you know, people kept recommending it to me and be like, man, you know, people on that show. And it's funny now, because I was one of those, I wouldn't say, like, I was one of these armchair survivalists, where it was like, people were telling me, they're like, oh my God, you need to go on that show because you can do so much better than everybody else.
That's awesome.
Yeah. If you go and ask pretty much anybody who's on the television show, they probably thought that they were going to do better than everybody else also. Like, right. I'm not saying like you're like, oh yeah, I've got, you know, I'm in the bag, but you're like, everybody thinks, and it's like funny that you find out is kind of some of that's just editing. Some of it turns out that it's not exactly what you thought. Exactly.
Right.
But so people kept recommending the show to me, telling me that, oh, like I would, you know, I had ought to do it. And so I kind of watched I watched the first season, and then I watched a couple episodes of the second season where, you know, people getting dropped off, they just had no idea what to expect. It was really a new concept, right? You don't have all the other seasons to study on it. And I was like, right. Oh yeah, I've got that. I'm going to apply. And I'm like, here's this redneck Michelle who really doesn't know anything about anything going, like, yeah, I'm going to apply to be on a television show.
but it worked out.
It turns out I made the television show.
So yeah.
Not why anybody would ever choose me, but I don't have the formal training that nearly all the other contestants did on specifically the last, like season six, like the season six that I was on. I mean, people had survival schools. They've been, you know, trained. They've had training, you know. Brady, he's your instructor. Donnie does with Paley Tracks. You know, Womia with all of her skills. Nikki, like, bring it. All of her, everybody, you know. So basically every contestant, Jordan, you know, living with the Ivanki.
Like, right.
Kim, who's, you know, a big, long-time guy, right? And I'm just like, well, you guys want to see me spear a beaver?
Like, oh, that's funny. But like, that just goes to show you that, you know, formal training and living it long term, you know, as you have, and not to say that the other contestants hadn't lived it long term, but it's as much a psychological thing as it is a, you know, a training thing. And that, yeah. And that really bore out, because you hung in there with all of them, and as far, you know, time wise did better than others, you know, many others as well. So
yeah. And, you know, on with my tap out, you know, you don't get to see everything. Like you said, you right. know, there needs to be triple the amount of episodes that there are, honestly, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Just to be able to, for people to be able to get your story across.
They can, you know, be three seasons with one group of people.
Oh, exactly. You know, and so with mine, like, they kind of put my nasty details down to just kind of being like, oh, I got constipated and I had to go home. And I mean, it was a really a lot more than that. It wasn't any one thing. Like, there's a lot of content, and I'm working with somebody to release, you know, all those grisly details of really what happened to me, because, you know, even when I tapped out, they honestly didn't believe me. Like, I said, oh, you know, I'm really sick. Like, I was vomiting for 3 days. I was extremely dehydrated. I had a dirty fever. And I had a couple of other issues going on, you know, that were really, really serious. And they were like, really? Michelle, like, you realize, like, if we come for you, you know, like, you're done. And I was like, yeah, no, it's time. Like, last night I almost died. So pretty much I'm done now. And, you know, they came and they didn't have the medic and stuff, because they were just honestly, like, they just really didn't believe, you know, because the last conversations they had with me, I had like food stored up, you know, I had like a rabbit and a squirrel.
Right, right.
I had like the sturdy shelter. I was clean. I was skinny, but I'd stopped losing weight. I'd plateaued. I had all these big plans, and I was like, oh, baby. Yeah, now it can get cold. I'm going out ice fishing. Like, then, nice. You know, I've got
it. Yeah.
And so I never ever had this loser mentality of like, oh, well, you know, I've had a good run. Like, hell no. Like, I dragged me out of there, you know? And like you said, it goes back to the mental side of it, with the, if you believe you can do something, you know, you might not do it prettily, and you might not have all of the skills and experience that, you know, would make it easier sometimes, but you can do those things, you know.
Absolutely.
And like you said, the experiences that I've had growing up, and the knowledge that I garnered and self-taught, and just like a deep-seated belief in myself that I was, you know, going to be able to do this momentous task and be able to feel myself doing it. Like you said, it carried me far, and it would have carried me farther if it wasn't for, you can't control every single thing that happens to you. You can sure try, you know, by not injuring yourself and stuff like that. But, you know, sometimes you get caught and that's what ended up happening. Every, you know, fighter eventually loses, right? You only think they're going to win. So those things aren't, you know, doesn't make me, it makes me a different sort of survivalist, I guess, than somebody who has, say, the formal training or the years and years and years of doing it, where my, I wouldn't say that my style is necessarily refined or any of those things, but I'm pretty competent. You know, I've been in a lot of rough situations, a lot of scary, sketchy things, and I've had to really look after myself. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like it was a good match for the television show. You know, it
is absolutely what it is. Yeah. So what, going into it, you know, before launch and all that kind of stuff, what was your preparations and mindset, you know, physical, mental, educational, what was going on with you?
Oh, I mean, I still couldn't believe it when they finally told me that I had made the show. It was about a month before, mm-hmm. you know, we had to get on a plane and leave. And I was just like, really, out of all of the people, really, you're going to pick Michelle here? And I'd look around the room and I would be like, wow, these people are really something. They are all super cool, super well-trained, well-educated. And, you know, I was just like, I'm coming in at the bottom of the totem pole here, you know, skill-wise and knowledge-wise and stuff. And I was like, when does that ever stop me from anything before? So, you know, big F-bomb and I'm going to do it.
Absolutely.
And so but I had a lot of stuff to prepare. So mentally, I knew from being able to study past seasons, you know, eventually I did watch them all. So past seasons, it felt like one of the biggest things to take people out of their game was worrying about their home life, you know, worrying about their family, worrying about a loved one at home or what they were missing. And I decided, you know, that I had to really change my mindset so that that wasn't going to be one of my concerns. So up to that point, you know, I was being a full-time mom and, you know, doing all the other things that I did. And so I have a super sturdy, awesome husband, Danny, and I was going to have to leave everything on his shoulders, right? So, So our preparation was, I just had to walk away from it. I just put every single thing in his hands. And I said to him that, you know, I trusted him, obviously, because our relationship is based on trust. So I already knew that I trusted him, but now it had to come into play where I just relinquished all control. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't have to worry about, like, Lars's first day of kindergarten, I missed him going to school. His first day is like, but it didn't matter. You know, I knew it was going to be in for the long run there, if everything went to plan. But it was just a really momentary blip in time. You know, it's a really small fraction. Like, even if you're gone for 7 months, it's a really short period of time over the course of your lifetime, or the amount of time that I'd be spent prepping Lars. And because my mom had passed when I was so young, I had done this thing with Lars where I kind of would talk to him it's like a story I tell about how I, you know, I grew him from my bones and my blood flows through his veins and the memory of our ancestors and my grandma, you know, and all of that has already been passed on to him through him. So my strength, my capabilities, my knowledge is already passed through to him. He already has it in himself. So all he has to do is listen to his heart. So when he misses mom, you listen to your heart, because that heart was drew by me beating, you know, the beating heart is from my body. And it sounds, it's, you know, it's
that's cheesy, beautiful. Right?
Yeah. It is to me and to other people. And some people go like, that's cheesy, but it was my way of making sure that Lars knew always, like I would always be a part of him. So even when I'm gone and he can't talk to me, he already has that strength inside of him. So every night, you know, for the last number of years, I had recited that to him. So now, but now that sort of thing is going to come into play. And so, you know, in the meantime, I had to sell all my farm animals and give them away. I had to quit my job as personal carry at the local lodge. My grandma had to get prepared to move into an assisted living facility because I was her primary caregiver. Mm. Lars had to move off of the farm and into Saskatoon where my husband or his dad lives, Dan, because he needs a good internet connection to do his line of work. So we had to move off of the farm, leave all of his friends behind. You couldn't tell anybody where I was going or what I was doing.
Right.
Then I had to read up on everything, right? I'm reading stuff on like snaring and trapping. I'm reading stuff on fishing, like as if I didn't already know this stuff. And it was like, you know, mental games. How do you mentally prepare yourself for, say, I was reading stuff like on military leave. In any news article I could read about, a blog from somebody who's done overseas missions. Stuff like that, like just randomly combing the internet for all these things, for tips and things of how to prepare myself mentally. So one of the things I really trained myself to change my thinking was that Lars and Dan, my grandma, they weren't waiting for me at the finish or at the starting point, like where I was leaving from. They were going to wait for me at the finish line. So when I was done, that's where they were going to be. So I wasn't going backwards. I was always moving forward, right? The shot arrow has to move backwards, but it always travels ahead, you know, that sort of mentality and idea. So I was in the airport. Dan took off. I told him, because, you know, you can't wear your wedding ring. I had to take out my nose ring, earring, you know, and all this. So I had Danny take off my wedding ring. I was like, you put it on there. You take that stuff. You're off, you know. So he took the wedding ring off. And I said to Lars, like, what are you going to do? Like, mommy's going to be gone. I don't know how long. Like, I love you all this. Like, what are you going to do when you really start missing mommy? Maybe it's late at night or you're going to be going to school and all this. And he's just like, I'll just listen to my heart.
Oh, that's the best.
Yeah. And there's like instant tears, like ugly crying, sobbing, because I was just like, oh my God, exactly. Right. Like, you know, I was like, he's got this. Danny's got this. And, you know, it's a get on the plane and away you travel, you know, off to this big, incredible thing that you have, you know, momentous task in front of you to complete. Because I never went into it with this idea of going like, I got chosen. So, you know, it's all about the experience and, you know, I'm just going to do the best I can. Like, no, that wasn't my sort of talk. my talk was I was going to win. Definitely.
Everyone goes in with the mission in their head, whatever it is they're doing, you know?
Yeah. And so some people just really go to fulfill this experience that they have. But for me, it was the end game was to win it for sure. Like I wanted to have fun. I wanted to do great things. I just wanted to do it. Right. I wanted to win. Like that was the end game. I mean, if I wanted just to go off and live off in the bush and half starved and, you know, without, you know,
right,
half gear, I could just really go do it in my backyard. didn't have to go on a television show to be crossed in front of millions of viewers or whatever they have to be, you know, have your every move criticized.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
That's funny. So going into it, you had this mindset, and while you were there, like, what was the experience like for you? Like, give us kind of an arc, you know, how things went and that kind of stuff.
So, I mean, they drop you off and you kind of get to see little blips of people's experience getting dropped off and everybody kind of goes, I would say probably goes through, a level of the similar experience where you have this buildup, like you're surrounded by people, you're being coddled, you're being chosen, you're being built up because, you know, you're going to be on this television show and you're surrounded by people all the time and you're doing all these forms and contracts and disclosures and you're having to film yourself and like, it's so much attention. For me, it was anyway. I'm not used to it. It's not my sort of thing. So then all of a sudden the helicopter rolls away and now you're finally alone. But my life kind of paused up into that point where you spend so much time and energy just trying to make the television show. And then all of a sudden now you have to go and do it. And you're like, oh shit.
Like, dang it. Did do it. Oh. Yeah,
now I'm actually on the show. Oh crap. Never thought I'd actually make it. I thought they'd pull me on the last second for being too offensive and a little too wrapped around the edges. So then you have to go off and do it. So then like the first thing I did, I was like, well, I'm going fishing, you know? And like, I don't think they ever really show me fishing, but like I fished solid for a couple of weeks, you know, I just would lose hooks. And I made like it was like a drop line set and stuff like across the bay. And I had lines all over the place and I had fishing poles and shot rocks. I had it all. It was a really cool thing. Turns out that it was just way too shallow there for fish. I never, ever found it. Never saw one through my entire state. Never saw a minnow or anything. Like, it was dead air. Yeah, it was dead air there.
What a shame.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, the reason why that location was so nice is because there was moose there. But I had this unfortunate thing happen. I had, you know, all your stuff has to be really set to a specific, built to a specific mode or design, I guess. You know, the weight of your bow had to be specific. The arrows had to be specific thing. And, you know, Saskatchewan is a really small population. So in the small period of time that I really had to kind of source everything once I found out I made the show, I mean, the arrows that I had for my bow, they didn't meet their specifications. So I had to get new ones made. Oh, and I got them the morning. I had actually two people make them for me. The first guy jammed out partway through. Lost contact with him. He just kind of ghosted me, which is bad. But like, no fear, Michelle has a plan number two here, you know. So I had somebody else, you know, pulling up for me. And he kind of the dog, I guess. And I got him the morning. I flew out to the airport. Yeah. Wow. It was stressful.
Yeah.
And so I get there to finally to orientation camp. And like we meet, like everybody spent half a week not practicing with their bows, which is a big deal. And so we go to start practicing and like my broadheads start falling off my arrows.
Oh no.
And in again, instant waterworks. Cause I was like, well, there that goes. Now I'm fucked. Like it was bad, you know? And so, you know, everybody there, anybody who had extra arrows, they're going to give me some of their extra arrows. And I could have taken this mixed bag of arrows, but every arrow was going to be different. Like I was going to get two from Donnie. Jordan had two or one or something, you know, like, so everybody had like one or two of these little items. And I was like, how can I take arrows that are all going to fly different? Like each arrow,
the spine is different.
Oh, the velocity is going to be different. Yep. The air is going to be different. I'm allowed like, what is it? Like eight arrows or something or seven. I can't remember what it was, like small amount of arrows. And I was like, these are all different. These are all different arrows. They're not to my length, like my draw length and stuff. And I was like, how is this a good idea to do? You know, like I was terrified of it. And so I had to make my decision and we tried to get arrows that were, you know, to my draw length and stuff brought in and I couldn't get them in time and stuff. And so I ended up dropping my bow because of it. And I put on the emergency ration, which I didn't need.
Right.
And so that area. Yeah, what a shame. Exactly. Because there was moose all over that area. And I would just sit there and watch like this big old bull walk around out there stopping, kind of tracking me. And I would be so mad. I was so mad because every time I walked away, you can just see your meal ticket gone, right? You know?
Gosh.
And
then,
yeah, and just devastation. And so I had to really, really accept it while I was out there that blunder on my behalf, really. I mean, I couldn't find the arrows. I mean, I don't have any hostility for the guys who kind of ended up with the arrow fiasco. You know, I mean, I could have taken a mixed bag of arrows from you know, the other contestants.
Right, right.
So willing to share it, which was awesome. But I was terrified of taking it and then not actually being able to use them properly. You know, you lose that arrow and then, you know, it just becomes a useless thing, right? And I was like, well, that's there while you're in fishing. And up to that point, nobody had successfully killed a big game. You don't know what's in your area anyway.
Right.
You know, it's not like you get to know. And so, yeah, so I had to learn to live with it while I was out there, like when I'd go around on my trap line and stuff. And, you know, I had over 100 snares set out. I had, you know, various traps and, you know, figure fours and deadfall, you know, I had a whole bunch of stuff going on out there that just, ended up, you know, it did finally start netting the game. It took a while. And so I guess my process was just, you know, you just have to accept it. Like the fact it would just enrage, you know, piss me off personally that like, I couldn't find the fish. Like Michelle, like fish all of the time. Like I was like, my family was like, so really, how many fish did you catch? And I was like, no, none. And they're like, no, how many though? Like really? And like, no, none. And they're like, are you sure about that? I was like, F you, I never saw even a fish, never saw one jump. Miserable. And they're like, wow, it must have been pretty bad if you never caught any fish. And you know, so we developed the saying, it's like, you know, kind of like the Dos Equis guy, the meme, you know, he's like, I don't always, whatever. And it's like, I always catch fish unless I'm on Great Slave Lake on a television show. Like, Yeah. So you had to just
kind of
accept those things about yourself, right? Like that it wasn't going to happen and move on and make something else happen in place of it.
Yeah.
So then I kind of have like these fantasies of how I was going to snare this moose, but they wouldn't let me trap it. Moose. It was not allowed. And I was like, I can hamstring that sucker so fast, like redneck hillbilly style. And so I have entire conversations about how this would happen and stuff. And then I would just, like, it got to the point where I would just laugh. Like when I would see these moose tromping around behind me and stuff, they would follow my trail through the bush. Like,
yeah.
So they would use my trails and I'd be like, that's just wrong. You got those things on the things. Like, you go make your own trail. You don't need to be on mine.
Buggers.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it was funny to me. I mean, it would, like I said, it would piss me off inside for sure, but not that it would beat me down. Like it's one of those painful, funny things, right?
Yeah. Well, that's a good strategy. Turn it into a joke. That way you don't get hung up on it and let it just eat you away, you know?
Yeah. Like you'd have momentary blow ups. Like I did, like,
of course.
Like this fox stealing one rabbit from me. But let me tell you, I wasn't mad because he stole one rabbit. There was plenty of rabbits being stolen from Michelle. Plenty of chickens. Like I just walked past and it'd just be a massacre of feathers. And I'd be like,
dang.
I'm starving.
And you couldn't trap the foxes, huh?
No, I wasn't allowed to trap the foxes. And so same thing. I'd have like these big intense conversation, which, you know, again, I don't think they ever show. I never really watched the show because I can't stand the sound of myself. So it wasn't going to happen. I could watch other people, but not myself. So I'd have this big, long, intense conversation with myself about trapping this fox and like how I was going to do it and like, you know, how tasty that meat was going to be and what I was going to do with the fur. And then I'd be like, but you all realize I haven't killed that fox, right? It's not because I'm not capable. It's because I'm not allowed. It's the only thing saving this fox right now. And so you kind of, so I'd have to make it like, well, that fox is eating good today. He's got two rabbits. Guess he's not eating good today. Michelle, I have one squirrel leg left. I have
right.
One squirrel left to eat today.
But,
you know, you get tired and you get worn out and you get weak. And, you know, you go through muscle atrophy and then you have this constant thing. Like you don't know when the competition is going to end. There's no end date in this, you know, seasons that we're leading up to the current season 7.
Right.
It's like no end date. You don't know how long it's going to go for. I mean, I did with like 47 days. Didn't one of the other seasons last like 58 or 50, like one of the earlier seasons? It wasn't.
Yeah. You know. I don't remember exactly. I think the first one though, it was something like it was around 60 or maybe just shy of 60.
58 or something.
Yeah.
Something whatever like it was. It wasn't the 100-day challenge, right? It was half.
Right.
That.
Right.
So, you know, we had, you know, 70, 80, I think 87 was Patagonia, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah. You know? That was Fowler.
Yeah, Fowler and Carly and stuff. And so you get, you know, you don't know. Is it going to go 50 days? Is it going to go like 300 days?
Yeah.
You don't know. So people are like, oh, it could never last a year. Oh, no, it could. And it can. It hasn't happened yet because right. of the areas you get put in at the, you know, with a limited
range. At the time they put you in there too. Time. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Without, you know, you could easily change that format by giving somebody a map, like a topographical map of the area and putting them in, say, June. Like right. the bugs are terrible, but it's easily doable. You know, then. Like, I shouldn't say easily doable, like it's no skin off your back, but it'd be a very, very different game giving that sort of information to contestants,
right.
you know, like that we've had on the show. So, I mean, I guess that's it. You just keep living day to day and keep going and figuring it out and try to make your jokes and change your perspective of things and, you know, and hope that whatever they choose to show of you on television is really your best, your best side.
What was going on with you, like, psychologically? I know a lot of people report, you know, they have, you know, interesting self-dialogues and, you know, come to terms with things. Did anything like that come up for you?
I wouldn't really say so, no. But I had been through, like, before this TV show, I had been through some really dark times and really rough patches in my life where I had already experienced those things about myself.
Okay.
So I would say that it was maybe less of a revelation for me out there having
been, less to work through.
Yeah. Maybe, or maybe I have so much more that I just get used to having to work through it on a regular basis.
Right.
I'm a black hole, but you know, I just had a lot of stuff growing up. I had a lot of stuff as a young adult, a lot of negativity built up inside of myself. You know, I've already explored those areas of myself. There wasn't any unsurprising, I guess, parts of it. There was a point where I don't know if they talk about it, where I was having just a really rough day after a med check, because it kind of throws you off because you see people and then you got to get back into your own routine again.
Right. Kind of kills your momentum, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Because then you're like, oh shit, it's still a competition. We didn't win. You know, now it's another week or it's 2 weeks till they come again. I don't know. They didn't have to check on me a lot. My weight wasn't an issue. And psychologically, I was really super strong. You know, and again, just kind of I attribute that to the trials and errors that I've already experienced in my life. So they would, so it kind of threw you for a loop. So then I was like walking along the rocks and I was like, you know, if I just fell here, I would like break my leg and then this thing would be done with. And then I wouldn't have to be hungry anymore. And I was like, well, that's really dumb. Like, or you could just go home and call her quits, but you don't have to break your leg. And I was like, but then I was like, nobody would be like, oh man, she just broke her leg. No wonder she had to go home. And I was like, wow, I wonder if other people think these things, like where you're like, well, I can just go home and just by breaking my leg. And then people would be like, well, at least she had a reason for going home.
Right.
And so I would talk all that stuff out on camera and I'd be like, that's nuts. So I couldn't imagine actually doing that. But like, the thought crossed my mind. Like, that's crazy talk. And so I'd have like dialogues like that. And of course I never did. I mean, purposely try to like fall off a cliff and break my leg to be extracted, you know?
Right.
To the point where it's like, I guess it's not about wanting to self-harm yourself. It's about wanting to be seen as maybe honorable and strong, especially when you're not willing or wanting to quit, even if you're having like a rough time,
you know,
at that exact second, right?
Yeah.
And it's just kind of a reminder for people to look for the big picture and things, like even though you're going through shit right at this exact time, it doesn't mean that that's the end point for you.
Right.
You know, put that load down and pick it back up the next day or a week later to carry, you know, to keep carrying it, you know, and let it out and talk to somebody and seek the help that you need. Because it's easy to get lost, I think, sometimes. So psychologically, I mean, I was generally in a really, really good place.
Nice. That definitely came out. I mean, like, you know, you said you were psychologically strong and that was pretty apparent, even if they were editing it to make it not seem that way sometimes.
Yeah. And I mean, when you record everything, they're going to catch you on a bad day.
Oh, of course.
I mean,
you can highlight whatever they want.
Yeah. An hour. And it could just be, I mean, they're making an interesting storyline for you. Right. Too, right. Because I mean, if I just sit there and be like, oh yeah, this one time I did X, the people are going to be like, she's not a real person. I mean, does she ever get angry? I'm like, oh yeah, I do. Definitely. I blow my gasket from time to time. And then I sleep for 2 days after because it exhausts me so much. And so, I mean, they try to create you, take all those different facets of yourself and, like I said, try to jam it into 1 hour, basically.
Yeah.
5 minutes of screen time. So I think they do a good job, and I have to give them credit for sifting through, I don't know how many hours. I would film all day, wake up in the night, film.
Right. You know,
there's a lot of shitty footage somebody would have to listen to, like a lot of me singing terrible songs. Like, I was singing, it was like, oh God, what was it? You know, I kind of would just run through the gamut. And then the one day it was like, I was singing some Backstreet Boys and Spice Girls, that's what it was. And I was like, well, I really feel sorry for whoever is having to listen to this. And it was like, as I was doing something, like I was probably like gutting a rabbit or singing, and I was like, singing some Spice Girls. And I kind of sang this terribly. And I was just like, well, I don't think they pay you. And so I would talk to the person editing too. I'd be like, wow, they don't pay you enough to do this job, you should ask for a raise. So there's no amount of money.
Oh, that's awesome. That's funny.
Yeah.
So what are, you know, looking back on your experience, what's a few times that you were like some of the highlights, like the experiences that you had or the things that you look back on really fondly?
It would be finding cool things. Like I found these rocks that had they would either have like little fossils inside of them or like crystals, right? Like we're like grow up. So we could go and break off a chunk of it. So I brought home some of those for my son.
Nice.
They had like little crystals inside of them, little whatever they're called. And anyway, that was really cool because, you know, you're going through this in this vast territory and you kind of find these little treasures and you start collecting things. Well, I don't know, I'm a collector anyway. So I collect all these like little cool things. Like I'd find like a jawbone from an animal. I'd pick it up and take it home, or like this little rock or, you know, an antler. Like I found some old from a caribou skull plate. And it was really old. And this was just from a small animal. And I found it and I drug those back, you know, and then I found some moose paddles and stuff. And so like you kind of just collect all the stuff to bring it back to. That was always a highlight when I found one of these little, they call them little treasures. Cause it kind of is like about creating like a sense of home, right?
Yeah.
Like those are your possessions out there almost. And you're kind of part of it. So that was always super fun for me. And then, I mean, when I did things like I said, I had the super warm shelter, and so it would get smoky as heck because I'd kind of walk up the chimney on it some to really keep the heat trapped, and then it would go around and it would super heat that great big moth or rock that I'd built my shelter up against. So it'd be like a big thermal heat sink, right?
Nice.
And then I could just literally like strip down sitting on my spruce boughs in there, and then I would just be like so warm. Like I'd dry my feet out, you know, dry out all my gear, and I was just so nice and warm and toasty. And then it would be kind of like reflection time. And as I sat there, that was the only time I had a fire, was that, you know, at nights, just to dry out my gear, or if I needed to cook an animal or whatever. I didn't bother having one any other time. And so then, you know, I'd kind of just sit there and do like a self-reflection or talk about, you know, some childhood story or something that had happened or something that made me, you know. And I really enjoyed that quiet, I guess that quiet time and it would remind me when I'm a mom, being full, you know, a mom, that, you know, when you get your kids to bed in that evening, there's that quiet period that you can choose to A, watch television, or B, read a book, or like talk with somebody, or it's like about self-reflection. You know, you kind of just take that time and do what you need to do when all, everything's just kind of quiet. So
Right. Those
are some of my favorite times. And then of course, I mean, every time you got an animal kill or food, or you found a new berry patch or something, like that would just shoot you over the moon.
Nice.
Those pretty great things.
That's awesome. Yeah. Just listening to you tell that, like, kind of takes me there too. It's fun to live it through you. That's cool. So what did you bring home from that experience that you didn't have when you went? Or is there anything you brought home that you didn't have?
Yeah, I mean, there is. It's really hard to quantify.
Yeah.
No, I kind of talked about this with somebody else already, but it was the idea that I wouldn't necessarily would say I would have a lot of empathy for people and say, like, in public. Like, not in public, say like people who were on television or in the media or like a public leader or any of those things, I'd be like, you're dumb for getting a DUI. You are dumb, you know, or be like, wow, that person really has made a mess of their life. And they're just like a train wreck on, you know, you just read about them in the news all the time.
Yeah.
And it was really a thing of myself as just not being able to mind your own business. But more importantly, how when you're in front of the camera like that, every single little thing you do, somebody can pick up on and choose to use that either to help you or to create their own narrative, you know, as part of a storyline or arc.
Right.
And so when I see things with political leaders where they do something and then they're getting torn apart in the media or whatever, you know, or like a celebrity and their whole life is on blast for everybody to make fun of or to kind of revel in. That really changed for me after, you know, having been experiencing that firsthand.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's necessarily sympathy or a little bit of understanding. And I mean, what I experienced was a really small scale compared to what, you know, other people go through. but it kind of translated also into being able to just be totally honest about my story and what happened. And I think, you know, then people would reach out to me, I guess, with their kind of stories and things that had happened to them. So, you know, that was something that definitely changed for me. But mentally, when I had to tap out to go home, it wasn't a choice anymore. I waited for 3 days and I mean, my heart was going erratic and I was losing track of time and passing out and I was done. I mean, I needed 5 liters of fluid in the hospital by IV, 5 liters before my heart would start going back to normal.
Holy cow.
So I still wasn't ready to go. I mean, I remember David Holder telling me, like, I'd be like, oh God, I wish I could just go back, like right now, like just send me back and I'd rather die out there. And, you know, I remember him just like, he's like, you're going to have to let it go. But at the time there was no way I could let it go. Like I was so invested in the show and living out there that, I mean, the mental whipping that I took having to come home, I mean, I pushed my body farther than I should have, farther than they would have allowed me to go had I had a medical check in the last, you know, 4 days.
Right.
They would have pulled me 100%. I was done and I still was going and I would still have went back, you know, it wasn't. And so to have to be finished to go was extremely devastating. I can't even begin to describe the self-doubt, the, you know, the mental beating I took. And so it took me close to a year, I would say. The show was airing and I couldn't watch it. I mean, I couldn't do it. I was not able to. I'd have to watch it with some other people. I'd go through anxiety and almost a PTSD where my hands were shaking. I'd start sweating. I would get nauseous. I could hear sounds and cut. Like, it was bad because I knew what was coming. And so people are like, oh, you did so awesome. And I'm like, I'm going in my back of my brain like, no, you know, it's not going to be long and you're going to be home. They don't tell you what episode you're leaving on or, you know, anything. And so, you know, you don't get to preview it and see what happens. And so I was not ready to lose that. So mentally it took me a long time to recover from it and then to build myself back up, going like, okay, yeah, you did it. You lost. That's okay. You know, and I kind of talked to, you know, a couple of the other contestants who were really in it to win it. And it wasn't just about this journey or traveling, right? Like, how long it took for them to get better mentally. You know, physically takes a long time to recover too, but mentally, you know, I brought that home too. It wasn't just about the good stuff and self-reflection. So I had to learn how to build myself back up to sort of surpass that, where like I couldn't pick out the clothes I was going to wear in the morning because I'd self-doubt. Like, it doesn't matter. Put on a pair of freaking sweatpants and like sweat. Nobody cares, literally. But I'm like, oh, I don't know. Like, should I wear shorts or pants? Or maybe I need to wear like these fleece pants. Or maybe I should, I don't know. Like, maybe I should, is it a short day? Like, it's really cold. Like, maybe I don't know. Like, I couldn't freaking get dressed. It wasn't a depression. It was like a inability to make choices after having made the choices that ended me up on the television show. And then with the issues that ended up arising for me, just like a debilitating fear of making the wrong choice.
Right.
And so I guess I don't think people talk about that enough, about how when people go through something like that in their life, not just being on a television show, but when something like that happens, the recovery process for something like that is a long time. It can take a long time to build yourself up to, you know, being a strong person again, I guess.
Well, it's quite the trauma, you know, that you experienced, and any, you know, forms of PTSD are to be expected with stuff like that.
And, yeah.
That's totally normal, I would imagine.
Yeah, it is from my experience of talking with other people, and not to say that it's the same as being in a combat situation or anything like that. Like, this,
of course,
self-inflicted. It's not, you know, I'm not trying to make it sound the same. I just say it was like, similar to that, like
with
the fear. And I mean, it wasn't from being alone. it was from having to quit.
Mm-hmm.
That my body was done. Like I was, I would have died. Like yeah. Your heart can't go on.
Right.
No.
Right.
And I was still like, oh no, see, I just maybe I can wait one more day. And I waited 3 days and 5 liters of fluid later and, shots to stop the nonstop vomiting and heart problems. Like I couldn't get up and walk to the bathroom without passing out.
Wow.
And so that's a deep stuff, right? That's what I was willing to put myself through to win this competition, win this show.
Right.
You know, people don't understand how bad you really want something. I wanted it.
Yeah, that's very clear. You're going to go through hell and back to get it.
Yeah. And now here I am. I'm recovered.
Right.
My heart's all fine. My muscle is all back. My weight stabilizes because you kind of go through when you lose a bunch of weight like that, like you kind of want to yo-yo. Your body wants to pack on fat, right? It doesn't want to perform like it used to. And so it can take quite a few, like sometimes years for people to get back to a where their body wants to kind of normalize itself, right. So it's not so yo-yoing. So that's all stabilized for me. And now I'm off and doing other things.
Nice. Very good. Well, we're glad you're recovered mentally, physically, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So how has life been since the show? You're doing a lot of guiding, it looks like. I follow you on Facebook and you're out there doing a lot of guiding. You got Lars out with you all the time, which is so fun to watch and see. He's just a happy kid, I could tell.
Yeah, most days. Some days, though, I don't think my life's a fairy tale either. Some people ask me, they're like, oh, you just said it's like a fairy tale. I was like, oh, no, I screamed at him today. He fought over what cereal he was going to eat.
Right. Well, he is part his mother, as you've said. So
yeah, he comes by very honestly, Ron. Like, you said about raising kids. It's like, yeah, I understand.
Yep.
All of that. So I'm doing lots of guiding. I kind of moved into, instead of being a homesteader now, what happened when I had to sell all those animals and stuff, I came back. I couldn't get a job because I was broken. Couldn't even get a job selling guns at Cabela's. Nobody would hire me. And then so I was really at loose ends of what I was going to go and do. So I had a friend who I had worked for the previous summer, and he knew me. He had known my story. He knew everything that had happened to me. And he was like, well, you'll come back and work for me, but I had to wait until March when we started hauling in supplies up to his flying fishing camp. So that turned into March, and that morphed into just being a full-time guide for him for fishing and managing the camp, which was a really soft transition for me to kind of really help me build myself back up because I had a lot of responsibilities, but in an easygoing place. And then I always had, the owner of the camp, Bryce, he was always backing me for it. So, to help build me up. And then from that, I went guiding in the Yukon for big game. So I was guiding for and wrangling for like moose and grizzlies and caribou and wolves, wolverine, the whole bunch of rams, down in dollar rams. And then from that, I went to whitetail outfitting. And so I spent basically 1 year on the road. Last 2018, I spent on the road. And then, or 2019, I spent fully on the road, just guiding and traveling all over.
Wow.
And then 2019. Then 2020 happened. I was in Austria in February doing trade shows for the Whitetail Outfitter. I was doing some ladies retreats up in Northern Saskatchewan, which was awesome.
Nice.
And then COVID happened. Who knew?
Stinking COVID.
COVID. The Rona, if you're redneck.
The Rona, yeah.
The
That's
Rona
what the cool
happened.
Kids are calling it.
Yeah. Or redneck, whatever. I don't know. So Rona happened. Turns out everything shuts down, including schools, daycares in Canada. Anyway, Saskatchewan specifically. So I was up working at my flying fishing camp, which is now winter. So we haul in all our supplies by snow machine. And like you said, you've probably seen some of that stuff I put up on Facebook or Instagram. And my husband works from home full time, like from his computer. He cannot be distracted. He trades the stock markets. It's hours or hours. So I was like, what am I going to do with this kid? Like he is, well, at the time he was six. And I was like, I need to be kind of doing this work on the side to get my camp ready for summertime when I actually make income. And I was like, well, I guess he's coming with me. That's how it's going to be. So he spent pretty well all of March, all of April, all of May, all of June, and part of July at a fly-in fishing camp. So it more so we ended up staying over breakup. So everybody else was gone and it was just me and him. It took 31 days for the ice to come off before a plane could come in. So at that time it was, you know, if something would have happened, I would have had to call a helicopter to, you know, extract us. And so, I mean, he just kind of went feral, right? He was just
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Like all kids should have that opportunity.
Yeah.
At some point.
At some point. And I mean, there was some really rough patches too, because I mean, it was just me trying to be a full-time mom, but also running a camp. So we're off grid. There's no, you know, I'd run the generator for a couple hours a day for electricity or to charge your phone up or whatever. And then, I mean, I'd drill an ice hole. I'd pump my water up by hand up to 5 gallon pails. You're bathing out of a rubber made tub. Like this kid is, you know, he doesn't get to see his dad, you know, other than a few video calls when the booster is running and you can get a cell phone service. I mean, that's tough on him too, tough on Danny. But I mean, it was the best option I could think of what to do with the old Rona running around. And so, you know, and then my season started. And so then it was good because it was summertime and Lars and I could get out on the boat and go fishing. And he was building, you know, he started doing the whole kids, he's building forts all over the place. Like
all right. I
was
making
lumber, the bucket of nails and hammers missing. And he's got like 2x6s stacked up in the trees. And I was like, no, you take the saw, you take the handsaw and you go cut your own branches down. Like, you ain't using my lumber. I held that shit on them. You're not using that for a fort. He's like, yeah, but it works so good. It's right there. I was like, no.
When I was a kid, we had to use branches. We didn't have 2x4s.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, I didn't have 2x4s when I was your age and you're not going to either. I'm like, you're going to go use a stick. There you go. Here's a saw. Get at her. Which, like,
good problem to have as a parent.
Yeah, the problem, you know, the growth that a kid can have from that is immense in the self-confidence and stuff. You know, but it's not without, like, Lars has some sensory issues that make it a little bit more difficult to parent, period. He really needs a routine and structure to kind of stay balanced. So, you know, with all of the unexpected stuff, it was hard for him. We lost therapy and all the stuff that, you know, these tools that we used.
Right.
You know, all shut down with COVID and stuff. So we definitely had some rough patches too. And I tried to be really frank about it and post about that too, where, because I don't want people to think that I live, that like I'm abnormal, that I have some perfect life and like that I don't have struggles or that it's all peachy, because I feel like with social media, it's really super easy.
Yes.
For people to think that, you know, they're like somebody will say like, oh, I wish my life was more like yours. And I was like, well, I don't know if you actually
understand. Come hang out with me for a few days.
Yeah. And that's what I say. I do say that. Like, of course, anybody's always welcome to come hang out with me. You know, we come up fishing or you do a hunt or just come by the campfire, you know, because I'm like the most normal person. I use an outhouse. I have sponge baths. I don't have cell phone service and, you know, all the time. And sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. And, you know, I'm just really super normal. And so is my family. We have normal struggles. And I have, you know, throughout all these exciting things, you know, my husband, for some reason, stays with me. I don't know why. We should not tell him that. You know, I'm super, super lucky and fortunate to have a partner like I do, you know, that we're on the same page on happiness and job fulfillment and working together as a team for things, you know. So
that makes all the difference.
Yeah. Right. I'm charmed that way for sure. But I don't want people to think that just because I post like fun stuff on, you know, on social media, that it's like that all the time. Like it's not. I've got tears sometimes at the end of the night after a shitty day after a shitty day of parenting too. Like it happens. I was like, well, tonight is like a 3-glass of wine night. If I myself. or whatever.
Right.
It does happen sometimes. So, you know, so yeah, I'm on the road lots this year. So right now I'm sitting idle. I just finished up at the fly-in fishing camp. And then I'm going to go to my whitetail outfitter in a couple more, in about a week. And then I'll be with him hopefully till December. So I was just up at camp for 5 months. I'll probably be at the Whitetail Outfitter for 5. So that's 10 months. Nice. 10 months of the year, they're already just kind of scheduled. I was going to go to the Yukon this year, but with COVID and stuff, it's not going to happen. So got to be a little bit closer to home in case school shut down and stuff, because at the Outfitter I'm going to go to, I can always bring Lars if I need to. So I don't want to. I've experienced, you know, the upheaval that happens in his little world when it's not totally routine orientated for him. He's got a hard time adjusting and with some of those changes. So, but as a parent, I mean, you just always do what the best you can, right? Like,
absolutely.
If you work away, you work away. That's just the reality of the situation. Yeah.
Well, and that's what, you know, a lot of people right now are having to make do like that. You know, it's a whole different world and we're all kind of in it together, but separately.
Yeah, exactly.
All at least 6 feet apart separately.
You ever find, like, do you guys have where you are wrong? Like, you got, like, the lines on, like, the aisles and stuff?
Yes, like, yeah. And, like, you can't enter the aisle from one side. You have to enter another one and go all the way down and come back around.
It's like, I've been in camp.
Yeah.
I haven't had to deal with
it. Yeah, so you came and, like, everyone's all socially, like, in order now because everyone knows everything, but Michelle comes in's like, what is going on here?
Like, not that I follow the rules ever to begin with. Like, going on a survival TV show, you should have, these are trained survival experts. I was like, except for Michelle, right? I don't kind of follow that rule. And then it's like, I come out and I go to Costco yesterday. Dumb. I've been out for a day. Literally, I've been in the bush for 5 months. I'm going to go to Costco now. And it's like,
right.
All the stuff, and like all the people, the sounds. I said to Deanna, I was like, well, I'm done. I have to get out of here because I'm going to burst into tears because I cannot handle all of this sound and all of these people and all of these smells. And there's lines here and everybody's in a mask. And like, I'm wearing a mask. And I'm just like, oh my God. Well, why would I do this to myself?
Get me back out in the bush quick.
Yeah, exactly. Called my Outfitter. I was like, so when am I coming? Exactly. Because I'm going to need out of here. Real
That's funny.
Back to my normal living in the bush.
So tell us about Legacy Survival Training.
So Legacy, I named it after partly, I have a horse named Legacy also, color legs, which is perfect. I bought her with some of, like, after my mom died, when I come of age, like I was 20 something, and there was a small amount of hair in the inheritance. So I bought this horse and I built a horse shelter for her with the money that I got. Like a small, well, obviously, it's not an expensive horse by any means. Anyway, named her Legacy because I bought her with the legacy of the stuff that my mom left for me, right? The small inheritance was this, was this thing in my brain. So when I came out of the TV show, you know, I really realized that while I didn't have all the formal training and really super cool skills that everybody else did, that I really did have something to offer people in a really roundabout, like in a basket of skill set that I don't think necessarily you get just from going to a gathering or from whatever, because I can offer like totally immersive experiences.
Right.
So that's going to be people's legacy. What are you going to leave behind when you're gone? What are you going to leave for your kids? So I've got where people come up and they come up for a fishing trip. And then all of a sudden they just kind of start tagging along with what I'm doing, right? Where it's like, instead of mom or dad just tying all the fishing lines and putting the hooks on for their kids, it's like, no, we're going to teach your kid how to do those things.
Nice.
Tying a hook isn't necessarily what somebody would classify as a survival training. But it's a life survival skill, right?
Like absolutely.
It's a thing that you do. So I started teaching kind of these really basic things, like how to start a fire. I don't mean having to get into like all the intricacies of like friction fire and going out to find the flint rock. I just mean there's a lot of people who just don't know how to light a fire, right? Like the steps involved in kindling and shavings and a starter, right. And just using a lighter. Like I don't ever go out into the bush without a lighter and a pack of matches and a ferro rod. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. Like if you're going out into the Canadian bush, you know, with a ferro rod only, I mean, yeah, you're going to get a fire going, but you know, what's a lot easier? Just having a lighter.
Right. Yep. Being able to strike a match.
Get her done. Cause sometimes your hands are so bloody cold and your skidoo got stuck or whatever, but it's like life and death. Like you're not going to go out there and start banging out a friction fire. when it's minus 50 and suddenly you're stranded.
Right.
Like that's a good way to have to die.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, so it's kind of like these skills of what should you pack in your bag? What are the things you should have? How should you know how to do things? Just really super basic, or I call really basic, but that are really not so basic anymore. Like I said, it's just simply starting a fire, how to tell wind direction. There's a lot of people who be like, well, the wind is blowing. Okay, but which direction is the wind blowing? Where should you build your shelter in relation to that? Where should the opening of your shelter be in relation to which direction the wind is coming? You know, and stuff like that. So it's just kind of a tag on that I started doing on fishing and hunting trips already. And that, you know, so I'd like to expand it where I'm doing more like ladies retreats and then speaking engagements as well. It doesn't have to just be ladies retreats, just retreats, I guess, where kind of the people are starting to bring me in and go like, give us a 4-hour crash course on X, you know? And so then I kind of go in and like a wrecking ball and leave like one too. And it's, that's kind of the idea.
Nice. That's awesome. Very good. So what are some things you can recommend to the listeners as far as, you know, those kinds of skills that can enhance their lives, the kinds of ways that they can incorporate nature, natural skills, survival skills, things like that into their everyday lives?
I mean, I think the biggest thing is that we have to just teach ourselves to stop and think. So many things happen, whether it's your reaction to a situation or something somebody said, or, you know, you get into a sticky survival situation. You have to have already trained yourself just to stop and think about it. Like, it doesn't mean that you're going to stand there for an hour and debilitate, you know, and debate the pros and cons in your head, but just stop and really think it through. If I respond in X manner, what's going to happen? It can be a split second decision, but you have better have thought it through in as many ways as, you know, as you could have in that period of time. So
yeah.
Like, people get lost. What do? Do they just stand there? No, they're tromping around on a trail trying to find it, you know, off the trail trying to find their trail again. If you would have just stopped, looked around, thought about it, you might have seen where you actually were. And now you've just made the whole situation a whole lot worse, right? Like, it's just really simple things like that. Like, just stop and think. And then I guess always have your, somebody knows where you are, you know? So I go out in the bush all the time and there's always like one or two people preferably who know in the rough area that I should be going and when I'm going to be expected back. And my word is my bond. If I tell the guys that I work with that I'm going to be back at 5 p.m. on Tuesday, at 5:01, they're already phoning for somebody. Because it means no, like I'm supposed to be back at that time.
Right.
And I mean, we talk about it all the time, like when people are in the bush, but yet we still find instances when they're like, oh, I didn't know when they were supposed to be back, or I waited to call. Or even in the city where people are supposed to be somewhere and then they don't show up, you know, oh, well, it wasn't a big deal, or it just took me longer than I thought. Like, no, just let somebody know, because if something happens to you, there's help already coming, you know, somebody already knows. So I kind of have that really hard and fast rule, like where somebody, and, you know, and as a result, I personally get used for a lot of people who are doing something, like maybe they're out riding a horse by themselves and they just say like, hey, I'm going out for a horse ride. I'm going to be back in an hour. You know, if I'm not back in an hour, like I'm just going, like, I'm just doing this one thing out here. It means like maybe something happened. I got bucked off or I got ran over or something. They're like, can you phone my next door neighbor, come and check on me? Because they know that when that hour goes off, I have an alarm set, I'm going to phone somebody and track them down to go and find that person, you know, or whatever the case may be. Because it just seems like, well, that's really, really a basic thing. Like, people aren't doing it though.
Yeah.
They're still not doing it.
Right. Yep. Which is evidenced by all the people that are continuing to get lost and not found every year.
Yeah.
And I would add too, like, even if you're living in the city, like, hey, I'm going to the store, I'll be back this time, or I'm going for a walk or whatever, you know, because you just don't know. And it's not a matter of being paranoid. It's just common sense stuff.
You could literally have a flat in your car and you forgot your cell phone at the store. And now you're on the side of the road waiting for somebody to stop and nobody's going to stop.
Right.
You know, I mean, like it can just be something totally out of your control you didn't think was going to happen. And like I said, you don't need to see boogeyman behind every door or
of course not, yeah.
No, it's really just having common sense and a courtesy to the people you surround yourself with so that they know, you know, about your entry and exit times. It's really super important.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you for those.
Yeah.
And then a couple of books that you might recommend to our listeners.
Oh, you know, I've been doing a lot of reading because I had Lars up in the bush. We don't have television. I don't have television at home or anything like that. So, I mean, sometimes I fall down a rabbit YouTube hole. I wouldn't lie. Watching dog grooming videos at 3 a.m. But so I've been reading him lots of books. I got him hooked on, you know, we read through like a year ago, the My Side of the Mountain, you know, series with him. He loved those. Then we got into Hatchet.
Nice.
So we read Hatchet and Brian's Winter, you know, and the River. And I think there's one more I haven't read to him yet. So
Brian's Hunt, I think, is the other one. Brian's Hunt.
Oh, Brian's Hunt. We did read that one, but
okay.
I think he wrote more. I'm not sure.
Yeah, there's like five, I think, in this, or maybe even six now in the Brian series. Cool.
But yeah,
I'll recommend I'll put the whole series on the show notes.
It's some of the stuff, like Lars, he's now 7, he turned 7 in March. So some of this content, like when they're talking about, you know, like Brian, like spoiler alert, where they're talking about his mom and dad going through divorce and Brian sees his mom with somebody else.
Right.
You know, I did a little bit of parental editing on that.
Right.
The age.
On the fly editing.
Yeah, on the fly editing, just a little bit. And then like same as Brian Hunt's, when he's talking about, you know, finding bodies and stuff, I kind of did a little bit of parental edit on reading that. And just because Lars sees a lot of gruesome stuff, but I'm still trying to shelter him from maggots crawling in people's eyeballs, I guess.
Right. Yeah. That's reasonable.
Yeah. We don't watch gory television. And so I also read him like The Incredible Journey by Sheila Burnford and, you know, stuff like that. Just really great books. Nice. And then for myself, when I was in Austria, I read The Alice Network by Kate Quinn. And so it's kind of a World War II story. World War II. Anyway, really loved that book. And then otherwise, you know, honestly, I just read whatever I find in camps because people leave behind books. So it's like old ancient Westerns or crime novels. Like when I left camp the last time, I was a gentleman I'd kind of met once before. He knew I was coming out of the bush. And so he had gathered a whole stack of old Western novels for me, and you put them all together and he said, do you want these? He's like, I read them this winter. And he's like, do you want them now? And I was like, oh, okay, I'll take them.
That's awesome.
I said, you know what, Tom, I said, when I come through on the skidoo again in the winter, I said, I'll bring you a whole bunch of Westerns. Okay. Like I'll bring you back a whole bunch and I'll leave them here for you. And he says, well, if I'm still alive come winter, I'll get them. Because he goes off, he lives in his little canoe. He's a, you know, he's a local way up north. And so he's got a little canoe and he just had went through a bear attack and torn apart all of his stuff and slept. It's, you know, he wasn't there. He was, you know, gone on the canoe fishing or whatever. And so I don't know, between that and he had a heart, you know, he's got a plastic heart valve. He's just like a really true, he's like truly outdoor person, right? Like he was outside his little canoe up in the Canadian Shield. And so he says, yeah, as long as I'm still alive, I'll get him in the, you know, I'll get him in the winter or the springtime. And I said, well, as long as I'm alive, I will deliver them, you know? And so it's kind of like, you know, I'm going to totally enjoy reading those kind of those old Western novels.
Totally.
You know, it's not like, I don't know, just because I'll think of Tom and him riding around in his canoe off the, like I
said, some sentiment to him now.
Churchill River system way up north. Yeah.
Nice. That's cool. Awesome. Well, yeah, I'll put that in the show notes and we'll put your legacy survival and all that kind of stuff. So thanks so much, Michelle. Really a pleasure to have you on and hear from you and gain some wisdom and good stories and all that good stuff. So
Thanks for having me. I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Well, friends, I hope you enjoyed that. Michelle is just a hoot, and well, that was a really fun conversation for me, and I hope you had as much fun listening to it. So definitely go check her out on Facebook, Instagram, check out her website. I've got all that, the links for all those posted in the show notes, as well as the book recommendations, of course. And I'll tell you, following Michelle on Facebook is fun because she's always posting good stuff, pictures of big fish and having her kid out. And all kinds of stuff. So, you know, like she said in the interview, she doesn't live a fairy tale, but her pictures are well worth checking out. So go give her a follow on Facebook and Instagram. And hopefully maybe you can get up to Canada and see her in person, do some fishing or hunting after all this COVID nonsense dies down. So with that said, appreciate you as always. Please feel free to connect with me on Facebook, on Instagram. Feel free to send me an email, ron@coyotespath.com. As always, reviews are super, super helpful. And share with your family and friends. That's one of the feedbacks I'm getting is people are sharing with family and friends. And I see people sharing my Facebook posts of the new episodes on Facebook. So really super appreciate that. And yeah, if anyone's looking for resources or whatever, feel free to reach out. Until then, happy trails.